and Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an OO and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair, 2337th Avenue. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent out, or you want to rent the travel trailer, check out wheelestate.ca and all their rentals backed by a $1 million insurance policy. And if you want to get into the real estate game, you talk to this guy, Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home realty experts at 306-502-5355. Now, as we talk to Paul, he's getting ready for a doctor's appointment with his son, Cruz, so he won't keep you too long, Paul. By the way, how do you like being a dad?
Love it. I'll tell you that. It's the best thing in the world. It's incredibly challenging, of course, like anything, but no, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Speaking of trades, big trade, Hamilton, Montreal. We see Johnny Manziel go to Montreal. What did you think of that deal?
You know, I definitely think it's a deal that's probably going to benefit both sides. I think when you look at, obviously, Montreal, they're in desperation mode. We talked about this at the beginning of the year, and Cavis Reed being on a pretty tight leash, and especially after, you know, releasing Josh Freeman, you know, a week into training camp, and them not really knowing who's going to play quarterback for him. So I think what Johnny Manziel is going to be able to do is give him a bit of a boost. I would think, you know, he's going to bring more fans in the seats, if anything. And I don't think his play can get any worse than what they have going on over there right now. You know, and then to get, obviously, you know, a guy like Darius Bowman, a big play receiver who's been really quiet, obviously, in Winnipeg the first 5 weeks of the season, is just really going to help them. And obviously, Chris Williams being injured. So that's going to be the key. And it makes sense why they would have shipped him out of there, and it'll make the Eastern Conference interesting, that's for sure.
Well, Chris Williams and Westerman come over to Hamilton, and I would have said, okay, that's a fair deal for Johnny Manziel. Then you throw in two draft picks, and of course, two linemen go the other way. I don't know. That seems like a lot to give up for a guy that hasn't taken a snap in this league.
Insanity. You know, I just mentioned a desperation move. This is more than just putting all your eggs in one basket. To give up two first-round draft picks, I think it's really insane. Like you said, you know, finding ways to get, you know, obviously Darius Bowman over there and getting some talent on your team is one thing, but to send two, I mean, sending one draft pick, they always say you never trade a Canadian for an American, especially when it comes to the draft, a top-end draft choice. That's kind of the big no-no that you don't do, and they went and did that twice, I guess. So, yeah, I don't understand it. You know, if you're trading for you know, Ricky Ray or somebody, fine, but to have somebody who's unproven, you know, is he going to be any worse than what they have now? No, but is he going to come in and save the day? I don't think so.
Daron Carter took snaps on offense this week. Hopefully that means he'll get to see some time on offense. I think they need Daron Carter on offense when they're going against the best defense in the league.
Absolutely, they will. They're going to need to be firing on all cylinders. And obviously, you know, Brandon Bridge coming off the game that he played last week. You know, Ballsy, if you remember back to last year when we played Calgary at home and Brandon Bridge came in late in the game and gave him a bit of a surge and essentially almost ran out of time. If you remember that, the defense played really well. Didn't even give up a touchdown. I think they were all, you know, ball field goals. And Brandon Bridge came within a drive of being able to put him ahead. So if they can go in there, manage the game the way they did last week, establish the line of scrimmage and run the football, you know, allow Brandon Bridge to go in there and make plays when he has to, you know, it should be interesting if he can get Daron Carter back on offense.
I think when last year when Daron Carter said he'd pick off Levi Mitchell and go for a touchdown and did, it was great performance by him, but it was a bit overrated because it was an overthrow and he capitalized, obviously, because he's a great athlete. But you go back and look at that tape, he was beat pretty badly in a few plays. That's going to be interesting because Calgary has a very balanced, explosive receiving core.
Yes. That receiving core is no one to mess with. I think, you know, with Kamara Jordan and Eric Rogers, Davaris Daniels, I mean, those are three of arguably the top five receivers in the league. So, you know, they're not a receiving core to be messed with. And so you're right. I think now more than anything, you know, there's a chance for them to go at Daron Carter. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic of that and how that lines up, how much defense he will be playing, who are they going to have playing instead of Daron when he's not on the field defensively. But, yeah, that offense is so balanced. They're so explosive. So it'll be interesting.
We're going to find out what this team is made of. We've been critical of Chris Jones and what he's doing, yet his team is 3-2, but you also have to put it in perspective. They haven't played a Western Division opponent yet. We're coming into the meaty part of the schedule. As you look at these five games, how do you see the record shaking down over these five games? You got Calgary, Edmonton, Calgary, BC, and then you got Winnipeg twice. Let's go six games. How do you see their record in the next six games?
Do you know what? Optimistically, to be honest with you, 3-3 is kind of the way I look at it. You split with Winnipeg. It'll be tough to beat Calgary this weekend. So you split with Winnipeg, you beat BC, and the other one.
Yeah, Edmonton. What? Yeah.
Edmonton. Yeah, that's, I think, the way you look at it from an optimistic standpoint. And, you know, let's not take Winnipeg for granted, because they arguably, I think you can make the argument that they could potentially be the best football team in the league right now, with the way they're putting up points, with the way Ant Harris is playing on the ground, and defensively. I mean, that offensive line is just to watch them pound the ball the way they did last week. I mean, they put up almost 120 points in three games. So it just goes to show how explosive they are.
I know we're tight on time here because you got to get into the doctors here, but two more quick questions for you. Jerome Messam, I hope they feed him the ball this week because he is angry as he faces the Stamps.
Oh, he is. And nobody, we talked about it, we've said it over and over again, nobody plays better with their chips on the shoulders when they got things improved than Jerome Messam. And they're going to need him. You know, we talked about this ballsy last week, and the game plan, I think, came to fruition because they were able to control the ground, and they were able to pound the ball away with all three guys, right? I think, Thigpen, obviously, with this big run, I think he was, 1-for-80 is what it was. Trey Mason came in, scattered a bit, and then Jerome Messam went in there and closed the game, and they all equally had the ball in their own moments, but they're going to need to mess the ball early.
I give him a puncher's chance for this reason, because Bo Levi Mitchell does not look 100% healthy. He wasn't very mobile back there. I know they got a good offensive line, but the Riders' defense, if they can get pressure with some exotic blitzing and some pressure up front, they could make some things happen. Play with a short field, get a turnover here or there, and maybe a Christian Jones return.
Absolutely.
Again.
I agree with you. I mean, the last 3 weeks, they've been so dominant on the defensive side of the ball as well as special teams. And if they can continue to do that once again, just allow Brandon Bridge to just manage the game and not turn the ball over, I mean, absolutely, they have a chance. If there's a chance, this will be it. They're at home. Bo doesn't seem all that healthy. And I think, I think, to be honest with you, Brandon Bridge's coming out party will be this weekend. If he wants to solidify himself as a number one quarterback and a quarterback that could start and be at the upper echelon to the league, this is going to be the game to do it.
That's a very good point. Okay, so if you want to get in the real estate game, give Paul Waldo a call, 306-502-5355. Do you have any deals or price ranges people are looking for?
Yeah, Homes by Dreams. We got some great listings all over the city, and we got 15622 McCaffey. It's a 1,400 square foot, two-story. We got great promotions and great deals going on. So if you're looking to be in the Harbor Landing region or in that south end, feel free to give me a buzz.
All right, that's Paul and Ball on football here on the Growing the Game podcast with Ballsy. Thanks, Paul Waldo.
Thanks, Ballsy. You betcha. We'll see you Saturday.
All right, joining us now on Growing the Game is Calgary assistant coach Mark Mueller, former Sheldon Williams Spartan, U of R Ram, and now Calgary Stampeder. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for having me on, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for being on, buddy. I really appreciate that. Okay, so let's start off there. Mark Mueller, did you always want to be a coach?
Yeah, I think so. I've always been around it. As a young kid, my grandpa was a coach. Both my uncles were coaches. My dad worked in football with the Riders when I was really young. So I've always been around that. And my plan growing up was to play as long as people would still let me play, and then to get into coaching as fast as I could. And luckily enough, I was in a good situation where I got to play it with the U of R and then work, finish my last season playing and then get right into a coaching position with Frank and Bernie there. So I've lucked out big time. And that was, that's kind of the plan. Yeah.
Now, for those that don't know, and if you don't know, you're probably living under a rock. Mark Mueller's grandfather is the Rider, great former Rider, great Ron Lancaster, maybe the greatest figure in Canadian Football League history. So how much of an influence was he on your life and on your football journey?
He was a huge influence on not only my football journey, but like you said, my life. He was a guy I talked to every day about not only sports, but school and life and things that I was going through. And it was, it, it's, he's been a major impact on not only my life but everyone in my family's. He was a great guy, and I had a great opportunity as a young man to grow up, and I'd spend my summers with him. So whether it was hanging out in Edmonton and seeing almost every home game and cheering for the Eskimos as a kid, or going down to Hamilton and being there for all of July and into August for 4 or 5 weeks, and it was a great place to learn about football and about life.
Hey, Mark Mueller joining us here on Growing the Game. So, Mark, what was give us a piece of grandfatherly advice from Ron. My grandpa always used to say, "Nothing good ever happens after midnight," and perception trumps reality. Basically, perception's everything, and facts are negotiable. What was one piece of advice your grandpa used to give you?
It's all about, especially in regards to football. If it's not fun anymore, it's time to get out. That's when you'll know. And it's never stopped being fun. It's fun every single day. And even some of the worst days in football are still a lot more fun than other things you could be doing. And he had went through some rough times, with some rough seasons, whether it was right at the start with the Riders when he became a head coach, or, one of the last few years in Hamilton. It was tough and all that, but it was still fun because he loved the game. And you'll know when it's time to get out, and I still haven't. Every single day I'm happy to get up and stay here all day and work. So it doesn't feel like work. As long as you love the game, you'll love the job.
One of my favorite lines, I was talking to him once, and he said, "You can't be afraid to throw the next interception, and there's no string in the football once you let it go."
Well, the no string on the football one is one that he used for a long time, and I know Danny McManus was a big believer in it. And, I played for Bernie Schmidt, so it didn't matter. I threw 5 interceptions in one game against SFU, and I still got to throw a completion on the last drive to get us into field goal range to win. So when you're throwing 5 interceptions and you're still in at the end of the game, you know that you're going to be the guy for, the whole game.
Yeah. What have you learned from guys like Dave Dickinson and John Huffnagel in Calgary?
It's such a great place to work, and it's a great atmosphere. Like, I get to learn about football every single day. And I get to learn in meetings with them or just in passing by. And it's there's two guys that have seen a lot of football, whether it's in the NFL or the CFL. They've done everything. They've played at both levels. They've played football games at both levels. They've coached football games. Huff coached in the NFL. Dave's obviously been a coach here and is now a head coach. So it's a really cool place to learn. There's not a lot of things that I can ask them that they don't know the answer to or haven't been through. So they're great sounding boards, and I get to learn, and I get to become a better football mind every single day just being around them.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and it seems like it is a very stable franchise. So what are your goals within the coaching ranks, maybe even within the Calgary Stampeders? Like, you were on the defensive side of the ball, now you're with the running backs. Of course, you played quarterback coming up through the minor ranks and with the Rams here. So what's your next step? Would you like to maybe look at quarterback coach or offensive coordinator? Because Dave was in the OC spot for a long time before John turned the reins over to him.
I think everyone who's a position coach at the level they're at aspires to, be a coordinator. And I think if you asked any coordinator in the CFL or at the college level, that they would aspire to be a head coach. And I'm in a really good situation here in Calgary. I love it. Like I said, I get to learn every day from guys. And the thing I love about coaching running backs, Ballsy, is that I have to know the pass game, the run game, and all the protections and things like that. I can't just focus on one part of the game because the running backs are an integral part of it all. But I think to continue to build and learn from, the really good minds that are around me, whether that's, Huff Dave or, Pat Delmonico with the O-line coach we have, and just be the best running back coach I can be. And then whatever happens from there on, it's kind of your job, and the amount of fun you have and the work you do takes care of itself.
As a Canadian, how much do you root for guys like Brandon Bridge? Obviously not this week because you're playing him, but guys like Brandon Bridge or Andrew Buckley, who stepped away from the game to get into school and follow the doctor route. How much do you root for guys like that so we can, maybe have a Canadian quarterbacking in the CFL, or is it not that big a deal to you?
I think it's pretty cool that more and more guys are going to training camps through the internship program. I think that just makes not only Canadian quarterbacks better, but it makes the CIS game much better, which makes in turn the CFL better because we have half our league is our Canadian players. So I think that's a great initiative by the CFL. And you always cheer for if a Canadian guy gets in there, it's pretty cool. And I think that with we had Buck here and with Bridge in Regina, it's getting to the point where when it's not a big deal, it'll be awesome. It's just another guy playing quarterback, and I think it's starting to get that way. And I think that that's the step that every Canadian quarterback wants it to get to.
You'd be a great guy to ask this to because you played in the CIS at a high level and had a chance with the Eskimos as an undrafted free agent before he got into coaching. If you had a son or you're talking to parents right now with a son interested in playing quarterback, what advice would you give him? Would you tell him to stay in the CIS? Would you tell him to go down south? What would your advice be?
Well, I think you want to play where you're going to get a chance to play and where you're going to have a chance where you're comfortable. It's about where you're going to be comfortable as a off the field as much as on you. When you go to school somewhere, you got to be comfortable off the field because you have more time. Everyone's going to have fun for that 2 hours, whether it's practice or the game or meetings and all that. Or as a quarterback, you should have fun in the meetings. That's part of your gig. Mm. But where are you going to be comfortable off the field? And I obviously had a great comfort zone with the U of R. You know, my dad, my uncles had played there. I had known Frank and Bernie for a long time, and it was like a second home to me. So I would give you the opportunity, you know, the insight of go where you're comfortable. And, you know, if I have a son, I would have to tell him that wherever you can play, you should play, because unfortunately athleticism for me, I could only play one position in one sport across the board, and that was quarterback. So luckily for me, I could do it. But hopefully my kid's a lot more athletic than I am.
All right, Mark. Well, I think you don't do yourself enough credit or give yourself enough credit there, because you were a hell of a player and even better person. Okay, so let's quickly wrap up here by talking about your team on fire right now, undefeated. But now you get to face a Western Division opponent and get to come home to face him. Is it always cool for you to come home and face the Rough Riders? You grew up watching the Rough Riders, to come in here as the enemy.
Yeah, I really like playing coming home to Regina, and it's lots of fun. I get to see a lot of familiar faces. Obviously, I get to see my mom and dad, and we get to have the staff, you know, most of the staff over for a barbecue at my house, which is quite the ordeal for anyone who's ever been at the Mueller Museum and see all the things that are in there. So a lot of the guys get a big kick out of that. But it's always a great place to play because it's so much fun. You know, you have the people are into it. It's loud. It's packed. It's one of the reasons you play football is for games and you know, times like the Saturday night. So it's a regular game, but for me as a guy, for you know, a kid that grew up in Regina, there is a little bit extra coming home.
You know, interesting team you got this year. You're younger, but you're explosive, and you got a lot of different weapons on offense.
Yeah, we got good players, and we got KJ, you know, Kamar Jordan. You know, he's been a big time playmaker ever since he's got on the field here. You know, 2.5-3 years ago, and the return of Eric Rogers and Davaris Daniels, who was the rookie of the year 2 years ago and had another good season and is having another one for us now. And you know, we got Bo and we got guys that can protect him. It's, you know, we got really good good players. You know, I think the game plans that, you know, Dave and Pat and those guys and the rest of us put together are you know, try to get those guys to do their strengths. And the running back play has been pretty well. We got some pretty good guys back there that can block and can catch and can run, and they've had some opportunities, and they've taken every advantage of them.
In that position, last question for you. In that position, what's kind of been an eye-opener for you in learning the running back spot in terms of coaching?
Just, you know, little keys that can help you out. But more so, it's just trying to help these guys see, you know, give them some run keys and then give them some protection clues and where to get to guys. And then don't give them too much information where the fact that they're thinking, because the reason they're good running backs is because they can run and they have the instinct to be good running backs. And if you try to do too much of them and they start stopping their feet, that's going to be bad. So you want to let them play as fast as possible, give them as many, you know, tips and clues as you can throughout the week. But when it's game day time, they can just let loose and they can run with speed, because if our guys are running behind their pads, they're going to be pretty good.
Another Regina Ram making his mark in professional football. This in the coaching ranks, Mark Mueller on Growing the Game. Thanks for this, Mark, and best of luck this weekend.
Thanks, Ballsy. Appreciate it.
Well, this is a fun feature on Growing the Game with Ballsy. It's a chance for me to catch up with one of the members of the Saskatchewan Roughriders and go under the helmet in a profiles feature. And this week, I catch up with Riders defensive back Mike Edom, who recently celebrated a birthday. And I asked him, hey, Mike, what the heck did you get?
My girlfriend took me up to Kelowna. Took me my first time horseback riding by the water, and it was beautiful. A little scary, but it was beautiful.
So you've never done horseback riding
before? I've never been close to a horse before.
And so how'd you find it?
It was scary.
Yeah?
It was scary, especially when you have allergies, too.
Oh?
Yeah.
Do you owe Reeves money? Or was he, who's he? Do you owe Reeves money?
I don't know that guy.
Oh.
He just happened to come in the locker room, pick up a jersey and spikes and helmet. We actually don't know who he is. We'll figure that out later when we get inside.
So what's something else that you haven't done, like horseback riding, that you want to do?
Skiing.
Skiing?
Yeah, I got a couple buddies that ski for a living back in Calgary that I work out with, and you know they always show me videos of them going on the slope at crazy speeds, and I'm always like, is that fun? He's like, oh yeah, you just gotta dodge it and dip your shoulders. And I'm like, so you like going through, you gotta like going downhill at 90 something kilometers an hour dodging trees? He's like, yeah, that's what I do for fun. And I tell him every time, I'd rather go hit somebody head to head than go down slope at 90 kilometers an hour dodging trees.
That's great. Mike Edom joining us here for Profiles. Okay, in your long but young life, what's the best birthday present you've ever received besides the horseback ride from your girlfriend?
My older cousin took me to Vegas on my 21st birthday, which I didn't know about. He said we're going to drop something off for his buddy in Nevada. So we were in L.A. So yeah. We drove, packed a bag. He came back from work at 4 o'clock. We drove for 4 hours to Vegas. And when I was, as we were driving in, I started noticing the lights and the heat. And I was like, hold on a second. Where are we dropping stuff off? And he's like, happy birthday. And I turned 21 in Vegas.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is great. Okay. So what'd you do that weekend? Can you tell us anything or what?
I got to keep it PG, but, you know, we went out, had a few drinks, and... yeah, that's all I remember.
Okay. Yeah. Did you win any money?
You know what? I went home in the hole about a grand.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't been back.
Okay.
I'm waiting for them to send my money back, and then I'll go back.
What's the most you've won ever?
At a casino?
Anywhere.
Do you when you say win, do you mean like what you go home with? Or what you win while you're at the casino?
Well, let's go with what you won at the casino.
Okay, I've won about $500 at the casino and then lost all of it and an extra $200, so... Yeah.
At any point, did you think about leaving, or is it a macho thing where you gotta sit there?
When I was up 500, I thought about leaving. When I was only had 250 left, I thought about leaving. My ego was like, you gotta get the other 250 back. So I stayed and lost everything, essentially.
Well, football players gotta have ego, so I get that. So when you're away from the football field, what do you like to do away from the football field?
You know, this game alone takes so much time away from friends and family.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing a lot of people don't realize, the commitment you make being a pro football player. Is huge. And so when you get free time, I like to spend time with my family, whether it's my girlfriend's side of the family, it's my side of the family, or just, you know, immediate friends that I grew up with.
Yeah.
I'll go hang out with friends and family, you know, my spare time. Just make sure you catch up and keep people in the loop. You don't want to be calling family members 3 years later, mm-hmm. right? Because they get mad and they expect a gift.
That's a good message. I like that.
Right.
Hey, so what's your favorite road city to go to?
Oh man, I like to go to Montreal just because they've got this great Jamaican restaurant that I usually go to, and I ate there all the time when I was playing in Montreal, and it's Mango Bay. And last time we were in Montreal, the whole, I'll say 75% of the team was in there, to the point where, you know, it took about an hour and a half for food to come out. So,
jeez, Edom should have got some shares on that meal. Eh?
You
should have.
I told the guy, I brought you all this business, let me eat free. And he was like, you do it next time you guys come in town, I'll do it.
It's always so next time, man.
I'm going to call him before we go this time. Like, listen, I got 12 guys signed up and I want my free meal.
Who's your roommate on the road?
You know what? I feel like they keep playing games with me, because it's like every time we go on the road, I got to wait till I get to my room to find out. You know, it's either Ganey, Marco.
Yeah.
Or Radford, but he got hurt, so who knows who that's going to be. So, you know, I don't know. I got to wait till we get to Hamilton, and I get to the room, then I'll figure it out. There's usually a strange look on my face when I open the door.
What's your biggest pet peeve with a roommate on the road?
When they wear headphones to try to keep the noise down, but don't realize it's so loud that it's still making noise.
Yeah.
And I can't watch my show, but they're enjoying their show because it's so loud.
Okay.
That's a pet peeve of mine.
Okay, so lastly, what's your favorite show? Like, what do you like to watch?
Oh.
You got to watch one thing. Every time you walk in a room, you have to watch this one thing, and that's all you can watch. What are you watching?
Every time? Oh.
Mike Edom highlight video?
No. I might have to go with a Jamie Foxx show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Either that or The Office.
Oh, you like The Office?
Yes. Oh, Daredevil. Those three. I know you asked for one, but I gave you three.
Yeah, that's right. You're like a man.
Whatever the mood is. You know, if I feel like laughing, then I'll go Office or Jamie Foxx show.
Yeah.
And if I feel like being lost in the storyline, I'll go Daredevil.
Okay, so let's wrap this interview up where we started. We started talking about being on a horse. So when your career's done, Calgary Stampede.
I didn't sound like it that much. It was a gift. I enjoyed it. It was a bit scary. Maybe when my heart stops racing, when I'm on the horse, we'll consider the stampede.
Thanks for this, Mike.
No problem at all.
Growing the Game with Ballsy brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. 2337th Avenue in Regina. Go see Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff and the great gang over there. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent out or you want to rent a travel trailer, you can do so at wheelestate.ca. Their rental's backed by a $1 million insurance policy. And if you have something more grounded you want to get into, like a home, check out Paul Waldo at Royal LePage Home Realty Experts. For the first time since 2010, Saskatchewan national champs, U18 national champs for football as they won the Canada Cup in Calgary. And their head coach, Jeff Stusek, joining me. Of course, he doubles as the U of R Rams receivers coach. And Jeff, wow, that's a nice feather in the cap.
It was a great experience, Ballsy. It was our boys played unbelievably well. Our coaching staff had them prepared. The organization sort of knew what it was like. I had gone through the last 2 years losing in the gold medal game, and when I was asked to be the head coach, made the commitment that we are not going to lose in the gold medal game. And our boys brought body in right away, and everything just sort of fell into place. We talked about adversity and embracing adversity from the beginning of the process, and we had so many times during the tournament, even in the games, where things didn't go our way. And I went in at halftime of the Ontario game where we were losing 8-6 in the semifinals, and we played terribly in the first half. And I said, "This is perfect," and the players were excited. This is the adversity we need now, and they came out and put 32-8 was the final in the semis, and then we faced a really tough Alberta team that had a lot of athletes that were bigger and stronger and faster than we were, but Saskatchewan tough, Saskatchewan football, and we persevered.
Yeah, this province always punches above its weight class. Just talk about that, because you have been probably the only downer in all this is you didn't get a chance to exact revenge on Quebec, because Quebec's kind of been Saskatchewan's nemesis when you get to the finals, but they get knocked out by Alberta. But, when you look at look at our population, and like you've said before, we don't match up so much in verticals and bench and maybe weights and heights, but in heart, nobody matches Saskatchewan.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Like if our guys stood there in their gym shorts and T-shirts and stood beside the Quebec or the Ontario or Alberta, even Manitoba team, you wouldn't pick our guys out of the lineup to be on your roster. But I know it's cliche, but it's hard to measure heart. And our guys, they just commit. They commit to the process and they buy in. And the difference between Saskatchewan teams, and I have having experience here, the difference between Saskatchewan teams and Saskatchewan football players is they put the team first. And it's not about individuals. All the other teams have these crazy choreographed entrances. The players are swagged out. They're all on Twitter talking about here to eat and all that kind of stuff. And our players laughed at it and took care of business. I was proud to be part of this team.
Yeah. And of course, you had a couple of great efforts though in that championship game. Let's talk about your quarterback didn't complete a lot of balls, but when he completed the balls, they went for big yardage, couple of touchdowns by Poussin too, long 70 yarders.
Yeah. We were a little unsettled at the start of camp, who our quarterback was going to be. And we took three of them, which is unusual. Normally you take two, and we had three guys that were sort of, depending on the day, they were the kind of number one. And then Keegan Cater just flashed some stuff for us that it looked like he was ready. He threw for 280 yards, which is a pretty good day. It was 8 for 18, which mm-hmm. wasn't great. Alberta's good. Like, they were a good team, and what they were doing is trying to stop the run. We put 220 on the ground in that game, and they were trying to stop the run. They had an aggressive safety, and our offensive coordinator, Dwayne Mason, who called an excellent tournament and had a great plan, those two touchdowns were the exact same play where just take advantage of a cheating safety, run a dig underneath them, and we went over top to Kieran Poussin, who's got some jets, and Keegan put it right on him, and I couldn't say enough about Keegan, and he turned out to be the offensive MVP of the tournament. I think the last guy to do that was Mason Nias and then Sawyer Bidner. Saskatchewan, for some reason, pulls out these MVPs. And then on the defensive side, Ramsey Durbus, who was our Will linebacker from Saskatoon, he was the defensive MVP, and he was lights out. And so that's 3 years in a row our Will linebacker has been the defensive MVP of the tournament with Josh White last year and Ryder Varga the year before. So for some reason, our players show up at this tournament and they're tough as nails.
Yeah, for sure. And you I think you had eight Miller Marauders on this team, or am I stretching that?
No. We had eight. Yeah.
And that's going to be a team to be reckoned with, mostly grade 12s going into this year. One of those guys who's pretty versatile is Emmett Stedman. He can play running back, receiver, and he's a pretty good kicker, too.
Yeah, he was our kicker this year, and he was probably our most productive receiver as far as receptions goes. But probably what you don't see is he's a tremendous leader, and he's the guy leading the chants in the middle of the huddles and in the locker room. And we had some really important moments. Those Miller kids, they're all really good. Dylan Kiefer, Sombach, Clow, Vibert, like they're so strong. And Michael Clow sort of cornered me in the locker room after our semifinal. And there was a few times during the week where our players missteps, late for a meeting or something like that. And the team would run because of it. And Michael cornered me in the dressing room and said, "You make us run every single time because he said, I'm not leaving here without a gold," because he suffered the silver from last year. And he said, "I'm not leaving here without a gold." And I said, "Yeah, you got her." And we ran the next day at practice despite, quite a strong victory. So it's all good. It's great, great kids.
That's a great story. Hey, just before we let you go here, just talk about, your coaching staff. You're obviously
sure.
A part of it. You put in a lot of effort. This is a volunteer thing for you guys, extra on top of your day jobs. Just talk about the grind that is coaching and what those guys put into making this work.
You know, Football Sask was very supportive of me in assembling the staff. And so I got the offensive coordinator, Dwayne Mason, who's the running back coach for the Rams, but he has a day job, and he's not a teacher that has time off, and I'll talk about that in a second. Like, but he has to take time off work. These are his holidays. And Kyle Stroder, same thing, works for the government in Nipawin, and he was our defensive coordinator. And then I have a few teachers on the staff. Travis Sirk, who's a longtime U of S line coach, just recently stepped away from the organization, but he is, for my money, the best or one of the best online coaches in the province. Lyle Levinsky is from Martinsville. He's a teacher. He's tremendous with our special teams. Lyle Hobbins, a young coach. He teaches out of Porcupine Plains. I got Vincent Donaldson, who's a defensive back coach for the Rams. So we had just a tremendous – oh, and Cody Halseth, who's a defensive back coach at the Huskies. So this sort of diversity of the province, but guys just automatically on the same page as far as what we're trying to get done, values, culture, taking care of those things, and then just coaching. They're highly competent people that I had a particular plan we wanted to execute on as far as how we're going to address the team and deal with the team and get them to buy in, and those guys were right in there with me, and it was we never missed a beat.
Well, it takes one man to bring it all together, and it's you. But before I let you go, as we tape this interview, I believe if my TMZ sources have me, pointed in the right direction, it's your 25th wedding anniversary. So it wouldn't be possible if you didn't have support at home. I think that's what everybody forgets. It's easy for boys to be boys and go to the field and live out your, live vicariously through these young men. But to be married to the same woman for 25 years and to have her buy in too is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Balzi. Yeah, Cheryl and I have been married 25 years today, and she is understanding enough to support me through the tournament that was 2 weeks away from home. And the day I got home at Monday morning at 4:30, and I was back on the field Monday night for the Rams High School camp, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So she's supportive, and we're going to go for a celebration beer and wings tonight and after the camp's over. But she's grown up with football of our family and our boys, and she gets it. But I would be nowhere near this program if I didn't have her in my corner for sure.
All right, Jeff. Well, congratulations. Good job on that, bringing the title back home where it belongs. And that's going to be a nice feather in the cap for Saskatchewan too. And you're part of the university ranks too. So I mean, if the U of S and the U of R can lock down Saskatchewan kids, that would be beneficial for both programs. Because we do have pound for pound, we get the best football players right here in this province.
All four elite programs better latch on to all 40 of these players. We're going to try as the Rams, but U of S, Hilltops, and Thunder got to get their fingers on all 40 of them, so none of them leave the province. But I tell you, the recruiters at the tournament were all over our kids, and so they know Saskatchewan football players are great. It's just hard to convince the Saskatchewan boys to leave the province, which I am just happy with.
Yeah.
And we're growing the game here, and that's all through the process. RMF, SMF have been great to deal with in the high schools, and that just contributes to having an outstanding U18 program.
That's Jeff Stusek, head coach of the U18 championship team here from Saskatchewan. Thanks for this, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Time now for our Where Are They Now segment. We're talking with one of the legends of the game, Bill Baker, the Undertaker. Now, Bill, we've talked in the past, but I don't know if I asked you this. You're a Canadian Football Hall of Famer, but you never won a Grey Cup ring. Would you trade in the accolade of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame for a Grey Cup ring?
That's not a fair question, I don't think. I think that's a pretty unfair question. I think you'd always trade whatever you could for a team win. So without having time to think about it, of course you would, because if you win a Grey Cup, that means a bunch of other guys win a Grey Cup, but of course you got to take that. It's a team sport.
Yeah, I guess
individual awards are individual. So if you can win a Grey Cup, it's a team win. Yep, and after a minute to think about it, yep, I'd take the Grey Cup in a heartbeat.
That's probably why everybody loves you, because you were a team first guy. When you think about your career, how do you want your career to be remembered?
Well, I think that the part of my career that was, for me, was most memorable was my first training camp when I was a kid out of high school, which was great, and then going back to the Riders and being there right in the heyday when Lancaster, McQuarters, Reed, there was a Ted Ernest, there was a bunch of great, great people there, and those were great 3 years. And then the most, you know, the time I was there in the 80s when we did the Save the Rough Riders and Save the CFL in 87, 88, that was a 86 was a very interesting time, and obviously I was still young enough at that time that I still played. The guys I was working with when I was general manager and was commissioner, there was guys who played that I played with. So that there's three great periods: when I was a kid, going to Taylor Field, when I was a young player, and then when I did the general manager sort of save the – we all worked together, and it wasn't me, it was a – great bunch of guys that worked together to save the Rough Riders and save the CFL.
Yeah, Bill Baker joining us here in Where Are They Now. That's what I want to talk about here, because we've talked about your career, and I could talk to you forever. In fact, you and I were on the phone the other day lining up this interview. I had to pinch myself. I'm talking to the Undertaker here about the CFL. But, Bill, when you took over the reins in 1987 as the general manager, did you realize just how bad a shape this team was in?
You know, at first, when it was the late fall of '86 when I came on. I think it was November, December. Knew it was really bad. Hadn't realized. I knew a lot of the issues because I was so very involved and recently a player, and I was living in Regina. But hadn't realized how much support we'd lost till I did a province-wide tour in the early winter of '87, and realized we really lost support throughout the whole province. And we really lost support of the young people. So we quickly addressed our business plan in the winter of 87, 86, 87, and realized we had to get the young people back in the stands. We lost a whole generation. So that priority dictated a whole bunch of decisions we made, I say, for the 87 season. And fortunately, a lot of that stuff worked out. We got lucky on some things. You know, we really did get lucky, and we had some great people, people like Dan Rambo and you know, the Kent Austin story came in and a whole bunch of other, the Aldags were still there, the Polies were still there. But we had to get the young people back believing in the Rough Riders and wanting to be part of the Rough Riders. That was our major thrust.
Yeah, interesting thing, though. You know, I want to get to Austin and Narco because they came in 1987. It was kind of a fresh blood that way, player-wise. But talking about getting younger in the fan base, you used wrestling to get them to come. Tell us about that.
Well, in the long weekend in July of 87, we had a real bad schedule. We had Toronto playing Toronto on a Saturday night in Regina, and I say that was one of our, I think it was our second game. We were really concerned about getting people to the stands, and we knew we had to have a perceived success, so we decided to put on, I think it was Phil Kershaw or somebody, wanted us to do All-Star Wrestling. So we brought All-Star Wrestling in, and oh my goodness, it was just the scariest time in the world, because the first 1,000 fans, Wrestling fans, charged to get tickets, and there was nobody behind them. So midstream, we had to, which we said we wouldn't do, we had to double up on the marketing and sell a wrestling ticket with a football ticket, and that we agreed not to do with the wrestling guys. So the night before that, it was Friday night, I was up all night, it was raining, middle of the night, and I had to meet the All-Star Wrestling guys at the Hotel Sask. I was afraid they're going to beat the heck out of me because I had said we wouldn't do a co-marketing thing, and they found out we did. But by the time I went down for breakfast at the Hotel Sask on the Saturday morning of the game, they said, we've talked to people, things are going well, we're pleased, everything's okay. And so we had 6,000 people at the wrestling event. We had 25,000 at the football event. It added that 6,000-7,000 people to our game. We both had a great success. The game went into overtime. We had an incident that happened where James Curry did something, I forget what, where Doug Mitchell, the commissioner, went and there was some charge of something, which we took on, of course. It was a great chance for us to gain more publicity. And in my mind, it became that day became the major turning point for the referees. We sold out. We had the old club out back, and we sold out of everything. We ran out of everything from hot dogs to toilets, for goodness sakes. And the event started at noon and didn't end until, I think, at 11 o'clock at night.
That's outstanding.
So,
Bill
so that, and we got a tremendous amount. Plus, we opened the store that weekend, the first store in the CFL. We got a tremendous amount of positive publicity. And I think the fans, that was a turning point for the fans, for the young people, especially realized we're going to have fun. It was a whole entertainment package we were offering. And to me, it was a major, major event for the team and for the province.
Okay, so let me ask you, were you an Austin or a Burgess guy? Because that was the Austin Burgess era.
Well, we were a both guy because after playing with Lancaster, when we only had one quarterback, I was determined that we were going to have two quarterbacks. And again, I'm a little different. We would not allow the head coach to run the whole team. He was there to run the game event. But Dan Rambo had recruited Austin, brought Austin into play. Quite frankly, John didn't want to keep him. And Danny came and said, no, we got to keep this guy. He's better than he thinks he is. And so I wanted two quarterbacks. After the Lancaster stuff where if Ronnie had a bad game or got hurt, we were through.
Mm-hmm.
So we had two quarterbacks. We told them, you guys are both going to play, and no BS. You're both going to go out there and try to win. And I thought Burgess and Austin were both very intelligent guys, really class acts, and we were really lucky to have them at the right place at the right time. So, again, Dan Rambo is a guy that gets the big credit for that.
Hey, Bill, so did you butt heads with John Gregory over that?
You know, we did. John and I had a terrible time the first month or so because my concept of what we were doing his, you know, as far as the whole team thing, yeah, we had a really tough time the first game because I was, you know, he was in charge of day-to-day stuff and winning the game. I was in charge with Dan Rambo and the executive, you know, all the executive of the long-term well-being of the team. And I don't think the head coach should ever have ultimate authority. They just shouldn't have that. So, yeah, we butted heads strong. But after that, we got along real well. It took us a month or two to get on the same page. We had some pretty rough meetings. I threatened to kill him a couple times. And literally I did. I said, John, next time you do that, I'm going to shoot you. So it was in good fun but semi-serious.
Hey, let me ask you, Bill, do you think that cantankerous style, and believe me, I like it, but do you think your cantankerous style led to maybe your short tenure here with the Rough Riders, 87, 88? Because you'd go on to be the interim commissioner of the Canadian Football League in 1989. And there, what's odd is you helped build that team, but once again, miss out on a Grey Cup because you're running the league when the Riders win the Grey Cup and maybe the greatest game ever played against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So do you think that cantankerous style led to your short tenure here?
Oh, I think there's no question. I sometimes exceed boundaries, and I'm way too upfront about certain things. And I think there's no question, even though I deeply appreciated the other people, the Tom Shepherds, the Cowies, the there's a bunch of great people. I tend to get my head down, and I tend to work too much and not spend enough time selling. I go way too hard when I do something and didn't take enough time to schmooze with the executive and spend more time on the soft side of the business, which is a weakness I have. I should have spent more time bringing people with me instead of dictating we do certain things, because I didn't mean to be a dictator, but certainly on a lot of the things I did, in hindsight, I would have come across as, you know, do it my way or else. And that's not the right way to do things. I should have been more political in my approach of getting things done.
So let me ask you, Bill Baker, was it a bittersweet moment for you at the Grey Cup when you're handing the trophy to the Riders and they win and you're a part of it, but you're not a part of it? And if I remember correctly, were you wearing a green tie? I can't remember if you had a green tie on, but I'm trying to recall that if I remember the video correctly.
No,
but
I had a green tie I bought for the first game in Taylor Field, mm-hmm. when I was general manager, and I wore the same green tie for the Grey Cup. No, it was great. I was thrilled. I was absolutely thrilled after all the work and effort and all those guys we'd brought in, the Austins, all the guys were there, the Aldags, the Ridgeways, all the people we brought back to the team and build a team in 87, 88, and see them win in 89. No, I was extremely pleased and couldn't have been happier. No matter what I was doing. And also the Grey Cup was, oh, my God, it was going to be a disaster in Toronto. It was a mm-hmm. – people have – because we actually put the Grey Cup on out of the league office, and it was an absolute gong show. And we were terribly concerned. The Rough Riders being in the Grey Cup really made a huge difference. Without them in the Grey Cup, we would have had a whole bunch of empty seats.
Yeah.
It was a real win-win. The Riders coming out and winning and – No, it was a great day in the history of Saskatchewan, and from my point of view, I'd already announced I was going to leave the league. I was very, very pleased, very excited about it.
Okay, so my last question, and you led me in perfectly here, Bill Baker, joining us here. Where are they now? Former commissioner of the league and Canadian Football Hall of Famer. Okay, so you're looking now, and you got Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, the three biggest populations, and they're having a tough time drawing, especially the Argos, who just won a Grey Cup, and their last game, they had just over 10,000 fans there. You came into a Rough Rider situation that was dire straits, and we had lost young people, and I'm assuming that's what's happening in Toronto without being there. Now, I know this could be a one-hour conversation here, Bill, but what would you do to turn around those three centers, but in particular Toronto? Is it doable?
You know, it's got to be doable, but, boy, I haven't got a quick answer for you. Obviously, I don't know what they're doing, what their communications program's like, what their marketing. Obviously, they've got to – the thing you have to do, I think, in sports is you have to have a group of people – who are committed and people buy into that. That's what we tried to sell in the Riders in 87. We tried to sell that we were committed, and because we were committed, therefore, they should be committed. And that kind of stuff works, I think. Now, in the Toronto market, boy, I'd like to go in and spend a couple weeks and spend time going around and seeing what they're doing and not doing. And it'll no matter what they do, it's going to take 2 or 3 years, if they're lucky, and work hard and lucky mostly, and do a great job of communicating with people to get their fan base back and get their fan base down to younger people and have it something that people want to do. I can't believe the opportunity's not there, but boy, it's those big cities, it's a tough deal.
Yeah, do you think the league can survive without Toronto?
I don't know. I can't imagine the league ever folding. And by the way, you know, I went to the venue we have it in Regina is one of the finest venues. Congratulations to the guys who put that together. That Taylor Field, wherever they call it now, I still call it Taylor Field. That new venue is tremendous. But I don't know. I don't know that. Again, I'm not close enough to it. Mm-hmm. I don't spend any time on it. I wish I had an excuse to do so. It'd be fun to spend a couple of weeks looking at it and saying, well, how do you make this thing survive? What do you have to do to make it survive or to help it survive? But it's a big job, and it would take time. But I don't have any quick fixes. Just a lot of work and probably some very smart, consistent communications.
I'll tell you what, this guy here helped build this league and get it to this point so we can still enjoy it. It's Bill Baker, the Undertaker. Thanks for taking time to guest with us, Bill.
All right, thank you very much.
And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, and I'm joined now by Jason Shen out in the Mooseman area. How are you today, Jason?
Not too bad there, Ballsy's a little cloudy today, but other than that, pretty good.
Hey, it's going to be a big weekend for you guys. Big fundraiser once again. You do it every year. When's it taking place?
Well, Sunday here afternoon, 2 to 6, we have our annual tailgate party that we host in conjunction with Borderland Co-op, and we bring out some Rider personalities. This year we got some Regina Riot personalities coming out, and fuel fundraiser, and barbecue, the live band, the whole works. It's a heck of a party.
Who's coming out for the Riders? Do you know yet?
Yeah, Steele and Roosevelt are coming out, so we look forward to having those guys on hand.
Good, two quality guys. Eddie Steele, who's a good two-way guy, D and O lineman, and Naaman Roosevelt is just a quality dude. You got the Riot coming out. Of course, you guys launched the female program. Looks like, you know, this thing's growing, too. There was you and Mooseman and Melville, pardon me, and now you got Yorkton and Regina on board. How excited are you guys to see this thing growing?
We're super excited for that. That is exactly what we wanted to see happen, keep the game growing here. There's four, so hopefully we can keep that momentum going into spring and then add a few more in the spring again, too.
Yeah, so in terms of the fall league, what are we looking at in terms of games? How many games is that league going to run?
Well, every team's going to get four games out of it, so we'll see one team twice and the other two teams once, but it's a good place to start. You know, we're taking a little bit of a softer approach to it, but it gets all these girls in the game and gives them some opportunity to gain some new teams. So it'll be a nice way to get the first ball off the ground.
It's exciting, eh? I mean, we're trying to grow the entire sport of football, but it's nice to see that female segment grow.
Absolutely. For me, like, this is the girls of today are going to be the moms of tomorrow that are going to be encouraging their kids to play. So I think it's a great place to start to get them involved in the game, and it should be good for our game long into the future.
Now, this is something, you know, this fundraiser's for your entire football program, right? Boys, girls, the whole thing.
You bet. Yeah, the whole crew.
Okay, so just give us some details. You said you got a band playing, you got entertainment. Where's it all taking place, Jason?
All taking place out at our convenience store here at the Borderland Co-op convenience store on the highway on the Highway 1. And it gets going at 2 o'clock there, and I think the Riders are sending out some cheerleaders as well, and we've got a bunch of kids games, inflatables, I think, a dunk tank, all kinds of things to occupy the time while people are there.
And hopefully we're talking about a Rough Rider victory after Calgary too. That would help bolster the coffers. Everybody likes to spend money once the Rough Riders win. How does the fundraising component of this work? Like, how are you raising funds at this event?
We do it in two parts here. So the first part is we have our own barbecue that we do alongside of the event. And Borderland Co-op has a community program that we do for various groups in the community as well, where we'll showcase that group, and 5 cents a liter of the day's retail sales go to the club. So it's a nice add-on to whatever the club's doing in the first place.
Jason, I've never asked you this. Do you have any kids playing football?
Yeah, actually all three of them are.
Wow. And so any concerns for you as a parent? Obviously not for them playing football, because we've talked about, you know, we've talked about injuries and concussions. That's been brought up in the football community. No concerns in your household?
No concerns. Like, we find that it's the same as any other sport, that every sport has risks, and you got to manage those risks. So when you get these kids involved in it, you have to, you know, monitor them, make sure that they're doing all the right things, and that if there is a situation where they get banged up, that you're really paying attention. But beyond that, you know, it's not any different than, you know, in terms of concussion risk, really, when you're talking about any other sport. Like, the risk is there. I'm just very proud of the fact that in football, we're taking a very active role in the youth side of it, at least, where we're trying to manage it. We're trying to observe it, make sure we're catching it in its tracks and not let things get worse. So that can only bode well for these kids as they go forward to play it safely all the way through high school.
You know, it's interesting. Like, I love listening to a guy like you, and you talk the talk, but you walk the walk, because you're obviously with Borderland Co-op, and you're putting money behind this venture. Like, what do you personally, Jason, get out of the sport of football to make you want to do this? I know your kids are involved, but, I mean, you're also, you know, I coach other kids when I coach. I love just helping the youth. What do you get out of it?
A ton of stuff. Like, one, I'm a community type of person. I like being involved in the community and making things happen and growing things wherever I can. the other big thing that comes with it is a lot of these kids end up being kids that work for us in our C store, in our home center, in our food stores. You know, we get to help guide these kids as they grow up through sport, and then they come to us for their first jobs and that kind of thing, and they learn how to be good teammates when they get into the work environment, and then when they take off to school and bigger and better things after high school, you know, we hope that we've set them up with all the skills they need to take on life.
Let's wrap this thing up, Jason, with stressing the importance of keeping this program going and what it costs. Like, what are the costs for you to keep this program going, boys and girls, and just what an undertaking it is for the community?
A lot of it is time, you know, just being able to dedicate the time to scheduling and coordinating and getting all the teams going. And, you know, when it comes to the money side of it, you know, it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of investment to keep turning over gear and keeping everything safe and improving the facilities. But we've been very, very fortunate to have such a great group of businesses that support us, parents that help us out along the way. You know, we can do an awful lot of good things with a small amount of money out here just because of the amount of community support that we get.
Jason, is there anything you're earmarking this fundraising money for this time, or is it just more like a maintenance thing?
Well, we've been working on a new project here for out of the field, a new clubhouse type of project, so we can add some dressing rooms. Right now we're working out of an ATCO trailer, but we'd like to build something a little more permanent out there that's going to provide for showers, dressing rooms for visitors, and everything else like that as we go forward here. So we're trying to get that off the ground, and you're fortunate enough to be selected for a grant through the Riders through the Legacy Fund. So we've got that helping us out too. So all these funds are going towards hopefully getting that off the ground so that we can keep building the program. Space for our girls, space for our boys, space for everybody.
Jason Shen, helping growing the game in the Mooseman area at the Borderland Co-op this weekend. If you're out in the area, make sure you stop on by Sunday. 3 o'clock it starts, right?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Okay, sorry. I guess I should listen to the guy when he's talking to me. 2 o'clock it starts, and they got Riders and Riot and the band and the barbecue. Make sure you get out and support. Thanks for this, Jason.
Thank you, Baldy.
And thanks to Jason Shen and all my guests for joining me on episode 42 of Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair, 2330 7th Avenue in Regina. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent out, or you want to rent a travel trailer, contact realestate.ca and all their rentals backed by a $1 million insurance policy. And if you want to get in the real estate game, give Paul Waldo a call, 306-502-5355. He's with Royal LePage, the home realty experts. Want to thank all my guests for joining me. Like I said, Jason Chan, Jeff Stusik, Mike Edom, along with Mark Mueller, Bill Baker, and of course, we started with one of our sponsors, Paul Waldo. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast, you can do so getting a hold of me at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. If you have a story idea you want me to pursue, check me out at that email address, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Please share this podcast with all your friends and family so we can grow this great sport we love. Also, you can hear me every morning, Monday to Friday, on 104.9 The Wolf FM in Regina, or during the Rough Rider broadcast with Rough Rider Game Day before the broadcast, or the Sports Cage Radio Roundtable following the broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.